Blog Talk Radio.
This is Chief for Yourself. John's guest today is Steve Taylor, author of Extraordinary Awakenings, When Trauma Leads to Transformation.
Hi, welcome to Chief for Yourself. Great to have you with us, wherever you happen to be in the world at this moment. Psychologists these days have been spending a lot of time studying something called post-traumatic growth, or PTG. The idea is that different types of trauma, like serious illness, addiction, or depression, or stress, can actually lead to real personal development. Our guest today says spiritual awakening can happen in the most unexpected places. Steve Taylor is a senior lecturer in psychology in the UK, and he works with something called transformation through turmoil. That happens when intense psychological suffering brings about a sudden and a dramatic shift into a new identity. And he's the author of Extraordinary Awakenings, When Trauma Leads to Transformation. Steve Taylor, our guest today on She for Yourself. Steve, I didn't do the title any justice in the brief opening there, so I'll ask you to give us our working definition of an extraordinary awakening.
It's an awakening which occurs in the midst of intense turmoil and suffering. So I found cases of people who've been severe addicts for many years, who've undergone extraordinary awakenings, been prisoners who've been incarcerated for many years, soldiers on the battlefield. So really any situation of intense trauma can trigger this sudden transformation into a higher state of being. And it's so radical. I mean, one of the reasons why it's so extraordinary is because it's so radical that people feel that they are different people living in the same body. They feel as if a new spiritually awakened self has taken over their identity.
Mm-hmm. And there is a very large spiritual element in the book. And I'm wondering, your early life was, I guess, not terribly spiritual, was it? What was that like for you?
Not terribly spiritual. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't spiritual either. But it was very ordinary. You know, there was no spirituality, no religion in my background. It was very, very, very secular. So, you know, when I began to have spiritual experiences myself, when I was maybe 16 or 17 years old, I didn't understand them. I thought I was a bit crazy. And I didn't tell my parents about them because they would have probably sent me to see a psychiatrist. So, I was quite confused for a long time until I discovered spiritual books when I was in my early 20s. And then I thought, I'm not crazy after all. You know, or lots of other people are crazy too. You know, so I'm not alone in my craziness. So, yeah, I think it's important to have that framework, you know, to make sense of your own experiences.
Mm-hmm. Well, writing about this type of experience, of course, in your work is very common, I think. And something, I guess, maybe pushed you to write about this particular topic. What was it that said, you know, I have to put this between the covers of a book?
Well, it began with an experience I had when I was, probably about 15 years ago now, when I was seriously ill for, thankfully, the only time in my life so far. I had a strange illness. It was called a quinsy, and a kind of abscess on my neck, which ballooned, and I had to go to hospital, and I got a bacterial infection while I was in hospital, so I became quite seriously ill. But when I began to recover after maybe 3 or 4 weeks, I felt this tremendous sense of new well-being. I felt kind of reborn in some way. I felt this new appreciation of my body. I felt as though my body was miraculous. You know, I was aware of all of these miraculous biological processes going on inside me to keep me healthy and alive. And I was so appreciative of my body. And when my energy began to return, I felt invigorated and elated. So I felt this new sense of gratitude for everything, for the people in my life, for life itself, for nature. And it was, you know, I'd always been a spiritual seeker or a spiritual explorer, but it kind of shifted me up to a new level. And it never really went away, this sort of ongoing sense of appreciation. So that was what encouraged me to look into other people's experiences. And I found that a lot of people had much more radical experiences than me, but in the same kind of vein, you know, an encounter with serious illness or encounter with death, waking people up into a new dimension of reality.
Mm-hmm. Viktor Frankl had the experience in World War II in the prison camp, feeling that survivors of the ordeal found their why, and that they were able to make it through when they did find their why. Otherwise, they perished. Did a lot of the people that you studied find much of their why? Did they come up with a sense of purpose? What did you see there?
They did feel a new sense of purpose. There was a shift from what you could say was a mode of accumulation, where the main purpose in your life is to accumulate possessions or success or achievements. There was a shift from accumulation towards a mode of contribution. So people's focus was no longer on themselves. It was no longer on taking from the world. It was on giving to the world. So people became much more altruistic, selfless and generous. And that became the purpose of their lives. That they felt that the purpose of their life, well, they do feel that the purpose of their life is to help others. And so a lot of people changed jobs after these transformations. For example, one woman, she was an IT manager for a pharmaceutical company, and she was diagnosed with cancer, and it changed everything. You know, she underwent a transformation after being diagnosed with cancer, and she felt as though she couldn't continue in her job. Once she recovered, once her cancer went into remission, she couldn't continue in her role. So she gave up her job and became a counselor, psychotherapist, because she wanted to contribute to others. She wanted to alleviate suffering. She wanted to, you know, or people in a more general way feel that they want to contribute to the human race, to the development of, you know, social development, the general evolutionary development of the human race. So I think that is one of the main changes that people experience.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds as though they, for the most part, put their priorities in order. Is that fair enough?
Yeah. Well, one person described it very clearly. He told me that, I think this was a guy who underwent an awakening when he was in prison. And he said that when you undergo this experience, the trivial things become more trivial and the important things become more important. So things like material possessions, success, career, they're not so important anymore. They become more trivial. But the really important things like love, compassion, personal or spiritual development, creativity, and so forth, these become even more important. So, yeah, there's definitely a shift in perspective.
And in the book, you look at a phenomenon you call transformation through turmoil. And if you would, tell us how that is different from post-traumatic growth.
It's not really different, but it's a very extreme and dramatic form of post-traumatic growth. Post-traumatic growth is usually gradual, and it takes place over many years. But transformation through turmoil is not always, but it's usually sudden and very dramatic. There is a sudden, it's almost as if a person's ego dies in the midst of intense suffering. But as the ego dies, another sort of latent self emerges, a latent higher self, I call it, which has been waiting for the opportunity to emerge. So in the process of the ego disintegrating, a higher self emerges and takes over. And a bit like in nature, you've got the phenomenon of a butterfly emerging from a chrysalis, the metaphor of a phoenix rising from the ashes. It's a similar phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. You've compared the experience to a spiritual awakening, and I'm wondering, how different is this from a religious awakening? And did you see a good bit of religious awakening too?
Not really, because religious awakening or born-again type of awakenings, they're largely conceptual. It's about sort of accepting a particular belief system and following the practices or conventions of a religion. But these awakenings, these spiritual awakenings, they're kind of non-conceptual. There's really nothing conceptual about them. And people feel as if they've transcended concepts and beliefs. And, you know, it's a kind of unfolding of a latent higher self rather than adopting a new kind of belief system. It's a shift into a more expansive awareness of reality, a more intense awareness of reality. You could also describe it in terms of connection. It's a feeling of transcending separateness and connecting to nature or connecting to other people. So it's a process of connection and expansion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You shared the stories too of shifters who responded to very difficult life experiences, not by breaking down, but shifting to a higher functioning awakened state. Now, I'm wondering, and the people hearing these remarks may see themselves in this, how did you find the people you studied in this book?
It was very organic and spontaneous. I sometimes have the feeling when I write books, I sometimes feel that they kind of write themselves, and the material that I'm looking for kind of falls into my lap, almost in a kind of mysterious and slightly miraculous way. It was a bit like that. It wasn't really conscious. I didn't really set out to find people. People wrote to me, or friends told me, you need to speak to such and such a person. And it just kind of evolved naturally over the years. I did have a couple of research projects at my university where I investigated particular types of transformation. I did a research program study on bereavement, the transformational effects of bereavement. So a couple of people came from those avenues. But mainly it was kind of spontaneous.
Our guest on this Chief for Yourself is Steve Taylor, author of Extraordinary Awakenings, When Trauma Leads to Transformation. And staying with the idea of seeing oneself in these remarks, what are some of the types of turmoil the shifters that you write about, what did they experience before their awakening, maybe some of the more outstanding, more numerous types of turmoil?
Well, one of the most frequent types of turmoil I found was incarceration. I actually had to, you know, devote two chapters to incarceration. Most of the other types of turmoil just had one chapter, but there were so many examples of incarceration that I had to, you know, give it two chapters. So I found a lot of historical accounts of people in Soviet gulags, or in the Nazi concentration camps, who would experience, a bit like Viktor Frankl, who you mentioned earlier, who would experience spiritual awakening. But I also found many contemporary examples. One American guy who's been in prison in Arkansas for 40 years now, he underwent a spiritual awakening after about 10 years in prison, I think. And also soldiers. You know, I teach a master's degree at my university on transpersonal psychology, which is really spiritual psychology, and over the years we've had three or four ex-military people, veterans, on the course, and it's people who've had spiritual awakenings while they were fighting in, you know, in wars. One guy, he was fighting in the first Gulf War, and he had a spiritual awakening due to sort of confronting death, seeing other people die, you know, losing his friends in the war and coming close to death himself. It really made him aware of the fragility and the preciousness of life, whereas he had always previously taken life for granted. So those are quite extreme situations, but in a way, the more extreme the situation is, the more likely it is to bring about spiritual awakening.
I know bereavement was another of the situations that people found themselves in, and most of us do at some point in our lives. Is there anything you can say in advance of someone's bereavement that might kind of, I don't want to say cushion the experience, but at least prepare them for what's ahead?
Well, you're right. Bereavement, I think amongst all of the common types of trauma that human beings face in our lives, the most powerful transformational experience is bereavement. Because, you know, after you lose somebody close to you, everything changes. The world is turned upside down. Everything is thrown into disarray. But when things settle again, then life can seem different, and you can feel different. But you're right. There are certain ways in which we can, you know, respond to bereavement or to any transformational experience in order to harness the transformational potential, to make it more likely that we will undergo transformation. And I found in my research that probably the most important qualities are acknowledgement and acceptance. So when somebody close to you dies, you have to acknowledge the reality of it. You have to face up to the reality of their death and the reality of how your life is now without them. You have to contemplate the reality of it. And you have to also, you know, acknowledge the feelings of loss and pain that you have. You have to go into yourself, go inside yourself, and observe and explore your feelings. And beyond that, probably the most important quality of all is acceptance. You have to, you know, open yourself to the situation. You have to let go of any resistance and surrender to the situation. No matter how painful it seems to be, you have to completely open yourself to it. And that usually allows the transformational potential of these experiences to manifest itself.
And today, with all of the stress the world is feeling, and that's, I'm sure, just exacerbating all of these instances of turmoil. Any special advice you could give people for dealing with their particular turmoil in the context of what's going on today? What kind of extra pressures are they going to be feeling?
We are certainly living through a very tumultuous and traumatic time, but that does bring opportunities for growth and transformation. And again, I'd say that acceptance is one of the most important qualities. Mm-hmm. You know, life becomes restricted and difficult in these times, but as long as you accept the situation that you're in, as long as you don't resist it and crave for how your life used to be, that can allow you to, you know, to grow through these situations. And also go inside yourself, explore your feelings. I can't emphasize enough the importance of, you know, entering your own being, exploring your own being through meditation and contemplation, observing your feelings and thoughts, and being aware of the space inside you. And I often think that you know, when life is hard, it encourages us to go inside. And when we go inside, we find a kind of inner harmony and inner well-being, which is always there. It's just a natural quality of being itself. So, you know, in these times when life is simple, you know, life is narrow and restricted and difficult, then, you know, it can encourage us to go inside and to find that natural quality of well-being.
Yeah, and here on this show, we especially like the idea of exploring the inner world. And I'm wondering, and there's so much criticism, especially in the West today, that we're too soft. Or is it fair to say that being so soft is going to be a challenge to doing this inner exploration, which is tough in the best of circumstances?
A lot of us in the West live fairly comfortable lives. You know, there are lots of challenges, you know, that, you know, we are never free of suffering. Suffering just changes from being physical to being psychological. I mean, there are many people in the world who are mainly engaged in a physical struggle to survive. But we've, you know, if you're living a comfortable life, you've moved beyond that into a psychological struggle to survive. So we're facing psychological challenges. You know, the stress of modern life, feelings of alienation, feelings of frustration, finding our purpose and so forth. So those are challenges too. But what I found is that human beings are actually much more resilient than we normally give ourselves credit. You know, we are actually incredibly strong, but we don't normally touch into our reserves of strength. It's only when we are challenged by crises and, you know, and trauma, that's when we go deep down into ourselves and find that inner resilience, these deep levels of resilience inside us. And they almost always enable us to cope and to transcend any situation.
I know these interviews were very touching for you. Some of them, I think, made you tear up. What were the ones that really, really got to you? Can you give us a story or two?
Yeah, well, one of the interviews which affected me most was a lady, a Scottish lady called Eve, who was a severe alcoholic for 29 years. You know, her whole life was dominated by alcohol. She was always thinking about her next drink every moment of the day. But like a lot of alcoholics, she slowly lost everything over the years of her addiction, her life slowly fell to pieces. She lost her friends. She lost contact with her family. She couldn't hold down a job. She lost her money and possessions. And finally, she was homeless. She was living off the streets in Edinburgh, in Scotland, shoplifting, you know, to fund her addiction. And she had tried to stop drinking, but never been able to do it. And at this point, you know, she was only drinking to control her withdrawal symptoms. She was only drinking to stop herself shaking or to stop her mind, you know, going crazy with paranoid thoughts and anxiety. So she decided to commit suicide. She decided there was no hope and there was no way forward. So she was going to commit suicide. And she actually attempted suicide. She jumped in front of a coach that was traveling at 40 miles an hour. But luckily, the driver swerved. So she survived. And the police came straight away, and she thought she was going to be arrested. But the policeman was actually kind and said, you know, how did you end up in this situation? Can I take you somewhere? Can I, you know, is there somebody who can help you? So the policeman took her to her parents' house. She hadn't seen her parents for a long time. And her mother thought that because she was an alcoholic, she would have to give her a drink. So her mother gave her a glass of red wine. But Eve couldn't drink it. She picked it up and put it down again, picked it up, put it down again. She just couldn't drink it for some reason. Then the doctor arrived and gave her some sedatives to deal with the withdrawal symptoms. And when she regained consciousness, she realized that she had lost the urge to drink. It had just disappeared. Then she looked at herself in the mirror and didn't recognize herself. She didn't associate herself with the person in the mirror. And she realized that she felt like a completely different person. She felt this new sense of inner well-being, which she'd never had before, and a feeling of connection. She felt connected to other people. She felt this kind of sense of empathy and compassion towards other people. And nature seemed to be more real and more vivid and fresh, almost as if she'd been reborn and she was looking through the eyes of a child. And you know, she didn't have a background in spirituality, so she didn't know what had happened to her. But she started to go to AA meetings, and somebody said, ah, you sound like you've gone through a spiritual awakening. But they also told her that it probably wouldn't last. They said it's just a pink cloud, which will only be temporary. But it did last. You know, it became her normal state. And for 10 years now, she's been in this higher state. She's never had the urge to drink again. And she felt a bit guilty about it, because a lot of people in AA struggle to stay sober on a day-to-day basis. But she had no struggle at all. It just fell away in a miraculous fashion. So ever since then, you know, her main aim has been to help other people, and she's felt fulfilled. She's felt a new sense of trust and optimism. So it's amazing that somebody can go through, you know, go from such desolation to such a state of well-being. It's quite remarkable.
Great story, yeah. One last question, I'll let you go. You say that shifters point to a new kind of future. You want to talk about that, please?
That's my speculation, that the shifters point to a new kind of consciousness, a new kind of human being, you could say. It's almost as if, you know, I say in the book that the shifters, it's almost as if there is a latent higher self inside some people, which is waiting to be born. And when the normal ego fades away, this latent higher self just emerges naturally. So it's almost as if this higher self is waiting collectively inside the human race, within the human race's psyche. It's waiting to emerge collectively. And it emerges very easily as a fully formed, fully integrated self. You know, so it seems to be ready. It seems to be hatching in some people and hatching collectively around the human race. Because it's amazing. Almost every week people write to me to say that they've undergone this experience. I think it's incredibly common, much more common than most people realize. And a lot of people who have the experience have never talked about it before because they don't really understand it. You know, they don't have a background in spirituality. And it's only later on when they stumble on a book like maybe The Power of Now or something like that. And they think, ah, this is what's happened to me. And they begin to talk about it. But I think it's quite a common experience, which is becoming more common. And it is almost as if a new level of evolution is manifesting itself.
Where do we find you on social media?
The best place to go is my website, which is stephenmtaylor.com. That's Stephen with a V, M for Mark, stephenmtaylor.com. And yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram through my website.
The book is Extraordinary Awakenings, When Trauma Leads to Transformation, by our guest, Steve Taylor. Steve, thanks for writing a book that leaves us feeling hopeful at a time when hope sometimes just seems to be in short, if not completely no supply. You'll be doing more work, I know. So when you do, please come back and talk to us again, okay?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks, John. It's been great.
And that will do it for Achieve for Yourself today. I want to thank you for being with us. Thanks, too, for your support, your likes and follows and such. They are always appreciated. So with that, I will say be well, and we will talk to you soon.